Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. If Donald Trump has a coherent Ukraine policy, then please explain it to me. Or maybe the lack of such a policy is actually the point. Also, the EU continues to demonstrate that it is a problem in search of a solution. Who will save the Europeans from Brussels? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests. In Istanbul, we cross to Tariq Saril Amar. He is a historian and political commentator. And here in Moscow, we have Dmitry Babich. He is deputy foreign editor at Komsomolskaya Pravda Daily. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with Tariq in Istanbul. We've been through it all from the very, very beginning. In the West, they will mark the beginning of the Ukraine conflict in February of 2022. We obviously, and for good reason, go all the way back to 2014. Now, I don't want to chew up too much time, Tariq, but they've had all of their narratives, you know, and they go through them like dirty laundry, okay? They recycle things, they make up new things, they abandon things. I think it was a few weeks ago, it was security guarantees. That's it, everybody, to security guarantees, okay? Now we're saying, NATO airspace, okay? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the man in the White House, he has said remarkably different things over the last few weeks. And this is what I want to get into, is that Donald Trump hasn't changed his policy. He just doesn't have one anymore. Tariq.
I would put it like this. I think you're fundamentally right. He doesn't actually have a policy on Ukraine. But his policy on Ukraine is actually policy on Europe. That's what he's doing. And I would call it, I've called it before that, I think it's pretty obvious, it's a Europeanization of the war. And it has to be thought of in parallel to the dirty trick that Nixon and Kissinger pulled at the end of, toward the end of the Vietnam War, where they basically localized it and got out. So, and then left, of course, their former allies hanging, and they were defeated very quickly. What Trump is doing, he's Europeanizing the war now. And his infamous tweet recently, where he says, oh, maybe Ukraine can win and take back all the territory, and so on and so on.
And even more. And even more.
Yes, even more. That is part of this Europeanization. What he has really said is, oh, you want to try? Okay, I leave you alone with this. Maybe you're right. Maybe Russia is a paper tiger. You go and try. And that's the real essence of this. Interestingly enough, some Europeans have actually seen that. They're fairly stupid, but this one they actually caught. Donald Tusk or Tusk of Poland understood this and tweeted about this and said, this is not good news. This is that he's going to leave us alone. And then we could go into details how he demands that the Europeans completely wean themselves off Russian energy, and then maybe he could ramp up the sanctions regime again. But these are pretexts. What he's really doing is he's loading this off on the Europeans.
Yeah, what he's done, Dima, is if we could use the analogy of Russian roulette. I mean, all the chambers are full. Go ahead, take it. Okay, that's essentially what's happening right here. Yeah. But on a more serious note, Dima, there is a downside to all this, and I think this is one of the things we have to address on this program, is that Trump's gambit, and I think that's what it is, and I think he actually made a complete fool out of Keith Kellogg by, you know, basically using his analysis as a justification and a predicate for his shift in policy, if we want to call that. But this shift in approach, at least, or narrative, allows the issue of escalation to be accelerated, because this is what this whole drone stuff is about, airspace being violated. This is an escalation, and they want to see, as usual, if the Russians will take it, okay? That's the downside of Trump, quote-unquote, throwing in the towel. Dima.
Trump is very inconsistent. I mean, what have we heard from him since February? That Zelensky doesn't have any guards, you know, that it was madness to play hardball with Russia. And here Trump actually said the truth, you know, the EU and the United States and Ukraine provoked Russia while the EU and the United States had no intention to send troops to support Ukraine if Russia attacked. So indeed, he was saying all of these right words, and suddenly we have this message on Truth Social. Let me just quote it. After getting to know the situation and fully understood it, I think, you know, that Ukraine, with the EU's help, is in a position to win back all of its territories. I mean, this contradicts everything he had been saying for 6 months.
Yeah, but isn't he also mocking the Europeans and mocking the Ukrainians by saying that?
Well, some people say that basically, if you look at the language of that message, it's not Trumpian. There is a very long sentence, and he used Mao Zedong's quote, which you know is usually beyond his comprehension. You know, that paper tiger. So some people say probably Trump just ordered someone. Okay. You know, please write something to the tune of, and that's what happened, because I don't recognize him in that.
You're saying, Tariq, so it's beyond remedial English. It means Trump didn't write it. Okay. I can buy into that theory here. No, in all seriousness, Tariq, I mean, I think this is a brilliant, he's using Kellogg's ridiculous proclamations about the status of the conflict, and he's using it to his advantage and hanging someone like Kellogg out to dry. But, and as we'll talk about in the second part of the program, there is a European elite that is very, very serious about this, and they're going to up the ante because they don't have the cards, as Trump says. As Trump said to Zelensky. But that opens up the possibility of pulling the United States in, because they don't. There will be overwhelming forces, even in the United States, not to see NATO fail so miserably. Tariq.
Yeah, that risk still exists, definitely, especially as we are now seeing these attempts to dial up the war hysteria once again with these unexplained drone sightings. I'm sure some of them are fake. It is also a fact that the Ukrainians have a habit of extremely nasty black ops and that they're very much into drones, and I leave that here. So this whole drone scenario looks very much like something designed to get us all riled up, and that's a bad sign. The other thing is, of course, that the Europeans are making fresh noises about not exactly confiscating the Russian sovereign frozen assets that they have, the sort of 200 billion euros or dollars, but of building a weird sort of loan scheme on them so that they can give this to the Ukrainians so that the Ukrainians can bleed a little bit longer. Because the thing you can't buy for the money is, of course, lives, right? That is coming from the Ukrainians. And what's interesting about these schemes, these weird financialization schemes for these assets, they're actually not a confiscation. They are sort of a down payment on future reparations that will, of course, never happen. And they must
Which will never happen.
And exactly. And ultimately, and nobody mentions this, or very few people mention this, they're still collateralized. They're collateralized against European taxpayers. And there are basically two variations. One is either through the EU, and the other is simply through the member states, but it is European taxpayers. So what they're mobilizing is what they still can do, which is go into debt and psychological warfare. Everything else is not looking very good. But on the other hand, I agree with you, Peter, what the Europeans have proven is they have an incredible talent for being spoilers. And the last bad spoiling could be to actually somehow end up escalating this war finally.
Yeah, but Tariq, I agree with you absolutely, and I'll throw it to Dima right now. But see, this is escalation of gambling, of risk taking. This is it. And so, Dima, obviously, if we take that to its logical conclusion, is that they're going to risk the ultimate conflict here, and their own self-preservation. Now, I wanted to discuss that in the second half of the program, but since Tariq brought it up, I mean, this is a exercise in self-harm and just gambling that you're going to be saved at the last second. I find that really irrational, and I find it very dangerous, Dima.
We look at all the crises in the world today. All of them were started by Western powers simply because they wanted to change a regime somewhere or improve the situation somewhere. And it all ended up terribly. I mean, look at Look at Ukraine. How did it start? Yanukovych, the former president of Ukraine, suggested postponing, not canceling, postponing the signing of association agreement with the EU. The EU made a revolution out of this.
And Damon, we have to remind our viewers, he even agreed to quote unquote political reforms and early elections. Okay. Exactly. I mean, that was an enormous amount of flexibility right there. And then after the coup, you had people like Sikorsky, Yanukovych, I don't know him. I never, who's he? I mean, they walk away from their own agreements. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm bringing this issue up, because they're risk takers and they're going up the escalation risk ladder.
Exactly. And the problem is that they never accept a concession from their opponent.
Because it's considered weakness. It's considered
exactly.
Weakness.
I mean, the first thing Yanukovych did wrong was to allow the German foreign minister speak to the crowd in Kyiv, speak to the so-called protesters. He allowed them into the country, and he allowed the foreign money into the country, financing all these groups that made this so-called covered revolution. The same thing with Syria. Syria is a tragedy right now. How did it start? There was some kind of a riot in the south of Syria, which the EU decided it had to support by all means. So they got European money involved, and they've got some of the Gulf monarchies involved, and we have this terrible tragedy.
Now Al-Qaeda runs Syria. Tariq, exactly. Jump in.
If I may add one thing, Dima, I think you're absolutely right. But I would add something. I would add that what is so bizarre about the Europeans, these NATO EU Europeans, is that it's actually the US who escalated these crises most and first, or they took the lead, right?
Right.
And the Europeans follow that. Although the Europeans are actually much more affected by the fallout, be it migration, if it's a crisis in the Middle East, be it the risk of having a regional war actually in Europe, which is...
And migration from Ukraine.
And migration, indeed. You are absolutely right. So back to Peter's point, it is astonishingly self-harming, and it's puzzling to explain it.
But okay, I would also add that the more escalation there is, the more absurd are the accusations. The latest accusation is that Russia tried to influence elections in Moldova by training special hybrid war groups in Serbia. In Serbia, we see it in the Western media.
Because it is today, and hundreds of thousands of Moldovans are being disenfranchised from the election. I mean, talk about the pursuit of democracy in Europe. It's a dead letter. Gentlemen, I have to jump in. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Let's go back to Tariq. You kind of preempted the second part of the program and the first part of the program about self-harm in Europe. Let's just kind of broaden it out, because something I've come up with the last few months is the fallacy of common sense. Because when I try to apply common sense to what the Europeans are doing, it always short circuits why would they make such an irrational decision, harming their energy security? No. I mean, why would you do that? Why would you, particularly Germany, break your budget rules? I mean, something that was sacrosanct. I mean, Germany is fiscally the solid pillar of Europe. That's gone. Okay. And then we have a federal chancellor in Germany that now people are saying, well, at least he can't be worse than Hitler. I mean, who said that about any chancellor before before Merz came in? Okay. I mean, it's really quite incredible. And one thing that I'm falling upon or trying to a rationale is that the Ukraine conflict is there. Is their sacred place to huddle and to strategize to save the entire European project, because they need an external threat. It rationalizes cutting social benefits, remilitarization, going into debt. I mean, it's really kind of a center point for European elites to save their own skin. Tariq.
Yeah, but look, Peter, even that is a high-risk strategy. If they were rational, right, on these terms, they could have taken a more or less neutral position on Ukraine. They didn't have to side with either Russia or America or Ukraine, and it would have been rational to take a neutral position. They could then have told their electorates in the EU, we need you to go through all of this austerity and so on and so on and to believe in the European Union because we have to be guarded against Russia, right? That would have been a rational strategy. But even that they are not doing. They're risking everything by going into this conflict needlessly and far too deep, damaging their own economies and risking enormous military fallout. So we are back to this thing about no common sense. There is no common sense here on any premises. That's the interesting thing. And it makes you wonder, look, if you cannot explain states' behaviors by realistic common sense, by realism, right, then you are left with very few options. And I'm by now really considering very seriously that we have to accept that for one reason or the other, a lot of the so-called European elites are not working for Europe. Quite simply, and that they're not working primarily for their home countries either. I don't think that's a conspiracy theory any longer because empirically, that's how they are behaving.
Yeah, well, I have a theory for that. It's called elite capture. After so many decades of elite capture, if you're a failed prime minister in Lithuania, you work for the Blair Institute, or maybe Soros employ you, or you go into the morass called the EU bureaucracy. I mean, they've designed a system. It reminds me very much of the Soviet Union. I mean, look, Gorbachev, he had the agriculture portfolio. He failed there, but it didn't stop him becoming head of the party, okay? I mean, there's so many examples in Europe. I mean, you know, the elite capture is the only way to explain it, because if you're put in a position where you can never fail and you've already been, oh, we got our eye on you, we want you to be in this place eventually, you know. You know, they move. I've always said on this program, you could take the prime minister of France and replace it with the prime minister of Finland and no one would notice. Dima.
You're absolutely right. I would add that Gorbachev, although he did a lot of good things, I think we had democracy, after his rule. But he was a purely ideological worker, as we say. There's that expression in Soviet language, ideological worker. He never did anything material, you know. He never had it an industrial plant or a military.
Okay, you're talking about European elites, right?
Exactly. The same thing with the European elites, you know, who are the top people. They're the ideologues, you know. They are not professional in any way. How is von der Leyen professional in pharmaceuticals or in banking, you know? She says empty phrases like, COVID is something we have, is a theme we cannot waste any time on, you know. We have to act swiftly. You know, when someone unprofessional is heading, somebody, they always say that's the same thing. We have no time to lose.
But I think it's worse than that. I agree with you completely. But this is, Tariq, this is by design. Okay, because I agree with your statement. Annalena Baerbock 360 say? I don't care what I'm paraphrasing what my voters think about Ukraine. Yeah. Okay, little did I know that there was a position called the president of the General Assembly. I didn't even know that position existed. But there you go, promoted again, and it's in American interest. I mean, I've been told I could get in trouble for saying this in Germany, but I'm not in Germany, is that it looks like the entire Green Party was an op from the West, okay? Because you have these people in Germany that are more hawkish, more Cold Warish, more ideological than the rest of the political spectrum.
Yes, and especially given where the Greens came from. They were
a pacifist, very left-wing party,
right? Yep. And so I can't disagree with you, right? I won't make any assertions, but I cannot disagree with you. And as a historian, I am sort of looking forward imaginarily to a future in which historians will hopefully, with good sources, write the real history of the Green Party. And I think it might very well be something about foreign influence. There's another case, Robert Habeck, next to Annalena Baerbock, vice chancellor, super minister of the economy, and next to Annalena Baerbock, one of the worst warmongers against Russia. Where is he now after having totally failed in German politics? I think at Harvard on a sinecure, of course.
There you go.
It is astonishing. It is astonishing. And it becomes very hard to explain any of this within normal open parameters. That one has to admit. And to simply dismiss every other explanation, plausible as they are, as conspiracy theory, doesn't work anymore. A lot of European voters do not, they are not as easily frightened anymore. It isn't enough anymore to say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory, you can't go there. It is far too blunt, it is far too obvious. Merz himself, again, I make no assertions, former BlackRock, and very well, of course, paid by now above 10 million wealth and so on. Ursula von der Leyen, you can go through these people. The way they are networked beyond Europe is amazing.
Yeah, meanwhile, I told our good friend Alistair Crook while I was having my hospitalization for my eye last week, I said, the Russians have learned to eat popcorn watching American and European politics because it has nothing to do with them at the end of the day. It's all spectator, is that they argue among themselves. There's jockeying for position and all of that. And the other side of the argument, if we can say it's an argument, is the Russian side. And that's not even entertained. I mean, that's, again, the fallacy of applying common sense. Dima.
Well, if we return to the word ideology, it will explain to us everything. Robert Habeck failed completely. You know, he lost a lot of money, but ideologically, he was absolutely steadfast, you know. In an ideological state, in an ideological system, which we lived in the Soviet Union, officials are not rewarded for successes, you know. They're rewarded for being loyal to their ideology. Habeck was absolutely loyal to the globalist, ultra-liberal ideology. You can't accuse him of being disloyal at any moment. The same thing with Baerbock. So they got promoted. Yeah, that's logical. But why is this also dangerous? Because this cabal in Europe, they accuse their opponents of most absurd actions. Like Russia is training hybrid war warriors for Moldovan elections in Serbia. Why would we do it in Serbia? 90% of Moldovan population speaks Russian. Train them in Russia, you know, or train them in Romania. But don't train them in Serbia. Why in Serbia? But, you know, if you don't believe me, believe your own eyes. Read Bloomberg, read Radio Free Europe. They all reported. The same thing with drones and with planes. Why would Russia now need to, I don't know, attack Estonia or Lithuania? This is the least appropriate moment for Russia to get in trouble with NATO. No, they say there are Russian drones. Russia is planning something terrible. So, you know, some people say about Russia, we have to be strong or we will not be living at all. I can say the opposite about the European Union. If Europe does not get rid of the European Union, it will die. Because every action, every new project of the European Union is more and more dangerous for Europe.
It's like a virus on the European continent, and it's consuming its host. Okay, because as we've said earlier, as they go up this escalation ladder, the risks get higher and higher. And at what point? And then I think the Americans will say, "Yeah, well, that's your deal. We're not going to trade Cleveland. We're not going to trade Cleveland for Berlin. Sorry." And the ultimate, and that was the nightmare all the debate during the Cold War. It's coming to fruition, Tariq.
I think you're right. And I, from a personal perspective, very quickly, I used to a long time believe that the issue with the European Union was that it needed to be radically reformed. I've given up on that. I don't think it can be reformed anymore. It was built to destroy democracy, the little democracies that European nation states offered after the war. And if we want to save democracy in Europe, it has to be retranslated. The power has to go back to the nation states. That won't be an ideal world. I know that very well as a historian. But what we have now, this authoritarian bureaucratic power grab from this European Commission that is absolutely not empowered, this usurpation that we are seeing, and this enormous elite in quotation marks that is completely detached from any sort of popular legitimacy and proud of it, that has to stop. And I believe it can only stop if we give up on the European Union, actually.
Well, and this is a topic Dima and I have had so many hours talking about, is that, I can remember, can the Soviet Union reform itself? And and I entertained that. Now I know it couldn't. And for the very same reasons that Tariq said about the EU. It is so entrenched. It's a project to save itself, not for its people. And that's the biggest problem. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests here in Moscow and in Istanbul. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.